This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network and Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. And I have today a returning guest. Some of you may remember back in December of last year, I spoke with former Newsweek journalist Tarak Haddad and continuing investigative journalist who is today going to be speaking with us about the very important issue of what is going on with the Julian Assange case. He has been all last week watching the live feed and documenting everything that's taking place, and will continue that this coming week as you guys are hearing this. How are you doing today, Tarak?
Great. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate everything that you've continued to do since we spoke last, but let's go ahead and get right into it. I mean, I think most people listening will be familiar that Julian Assange is facing potential extradition to the United States for accusations of his involvement in the collateral murder videos that were released by Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning. And there's just so much going on with this. I would love for you to just give us a breakdown and a recap of what you witnessed over the last week.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So obviously, it's a lot going on in these proceedings. And, every day we've got kind of, different witnesses coming to speak. So that's kind of what's been different about sort of the second stage of the hearings compared to the hearings that we saw in February, whereas February was kind of very heavily reliant on legal arguments about, whether this is a political offense and, very specific discussions about the actual extradition treaty. Whereas this 3 to 4 week process is much more, witness testimony and cross-examination. So that's what we had this week. The week sort of started actually obviously discussing the new superseding indictment that was presented by the Department of Justice and then served on the British courts. And as I'm sure you're aware, that was, served very late into the case. It was actually came 2 days after all the lawyers had to submit their skeleton arguments. So even that in itself is kind of another peculiarity of the case, where in any other legal case, you would never be allowed to just change what the indictment is, or because obviously you have to remember that, these lawyers are spending hours and hours, preparing the case. All the witnesses that we have for these 3 to 4 weeks were prepared on the basis of the old indictment. And then we have this kind of new 49-page document that came in and sort of upended everything. So the first half of the morning was kind of spent discussing that. Understandably, the lawyers for Julian Assange tried to kind of make the case that this is an abusive process and it's kind of shouldn't be accepted into the proceedings. And they tried to actually kind of, or the term that they used was excise, but they tried to kind of strike them out from the court hearings. District Judge Vanessa Baritza kind of decided not to do that. She went with the prosecution, unsurprisingly to some on that respect. And then when that decision came, the lawyers kind of built an argument to say that trying to have the case postponed once again till January, just to say that, it's completely... what's the correct word that they used? But they just said it was, completely implausible for them to be prepared based on the current, given that the judge has now accepted the new indictment, it's, preposterous for them to be prepared and to give all the best evidence that they can, given that, all their arguments, all their witnesses are kind of based on the old indictment. But again, the judge in the case decided that that would not be happening. So, instead of postponing, the hearings continued as planned. And then from then on, we went straight into the different witnesses. So we had four different witnesses in the first week. We had Professor Mark Feldman, who's a journalism professor at the University of Maryland. And then we had Clive Stafford Smith, who's the founder of a quite famous charity called Reprieve. I'm sure you all know Reprieve did a lot of the litigation and legal work around the Guantanamo Bay prisoners, just making sure that they had habeas corpus rights. And then after that, we had Professor Mark Rogers, who's a peace studies professor at the University of Bradford. And then finally, we had Trevor Timm, who's the executive director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation, which is obviously the organization set up with Edward Snowden after his involvement with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And we can, I'm sure, go into what they said more specifically.
Yep. So much important information there. I mean, it's what I want to just pause for a moment to say is how disturbing it is that there is a complete lack of information here in the U.S. where, and just generally in North America, if there's any discussion about Assange at the moment, which I can't say that I've seen any mainstream press comment on or even, talk derogatorily about Assange. They just sort of have done a complete blackout of what is going on right now. Is that something similar you're seeing in the U.K. as well?
It's actually been a very, very interesting few weeks where I think the tide has been shifting significantly, where we're actually seeing a lot more coverage than we were. Even more interestingly is actually a lot of this coverage is coming from the right-wing press, conservative news outlets that are covering this, and they're covering it quite critically, which is interesting. We had the Mail on Sunday, or the Daily Mail, as it will be known to you guys, but they've got the online site in the newspaper. So the newspaper wrote an editorial saying that Assange should not be extradited in the last couple of weeks. We had Hitchens today, who's quite a renowned columnist here in the UK, brother of Christopher Hitchens, as I'm sure many people know. He wrote a piece today saying, I don't particularly like Assange, but I don't think that he should be extradited. And we had similar things from the Times of London, which is kind of historically quite conservative, but also started covering it. And because I'm on this sort of video platform, I can actually see who all the other journalists there by name, and it is quite a big selection. There is about sort of 20 names. You've got some alternative media names that will be familiar to some people, like Kevin Gostola, the people from Consortium News, but we've got a lot of mainstream coverage. So we've got the Press Association, which is sort of Britain's version of the AP. So what they write will actually go to every newspaper in the UK, and they usually sort of print what they write word for word. And then we have, Guardian, BBC, The Times, Daily Mail, all those places were covering it. Obviously, criticism can be made here or there on their coverage, but, they have all written at least a couple of stories from the week. So that is positive. So it's a slightly different situation than the US, it seems.
Yeah, it would appear to be so. I know that you mentioned Kevin. He's with Shadowproof and Consortium News. They've been doing a great job. And you yourself on your own website, you have, I'll direct everybody there, you've done a number of write-ups. I think you're doing daily write-ups after each session.
Yeah, that's the plan. Obviously, I guess it's, sometimes a bit, dependent on what happens in the day, something newsworthy has to have happened, but I'm aiming for at least one a day. And just to kind of actually just go back to what I was saying about the UK coverage, something that might not be known to your listeners is that I think the reason that we've had this sort of upsurge in the UK coverage is that we had the case of Harry Dunn. I don't know if that name's familiar to you.
Oh, sorry. I don't think I know that name.
Oh, okay. So he's a sort of 17, or he passed away. He got run over actually last year, But essentially, there was a CIA worker here in the UK. She was based at this RAF base, and she was driving on the wrong side of the road, and she knocked this British 17-year-old off his motorbike and killed him. But then sort of fled to the US, seeking diplomatic immunity. And, you know, this has kind of upset a lot of people here in the UK, but I think more specifically to the Assange case, it sort of showed the massive disparity in terms of the this extradition treaty where, you know, we have this woman who's, even by her own lawyers, has admitted, you know, driving on the wrong side of the road, recklessly driving, and taking the life of this young boy, but we can't extradite her back to the UK to face justice for what she's done, and you know, and then we have the complete opposite where, you know, the US is demanding Assange, and I think that's kind of, it's kind of highlighted the big disparity in sort of how the US is sort of wielding its power overseas, where they're essentially saying they can take anyone they want to the US for to face trial there, but they're refusing to do the same here, and that's sort of kind of testing that US-UK relationship, which has obviously had quite historical links over the past.
Yeah, and one thing that I guess that I want to reemphasize is that there's, like the example you just mentioned there, there's nothing that is, I guess, traditional or that there is a precedent for when we're dealing with Assange, the treatment that Assange has received over the last years, and then now that they have him in their hands, and this discussion of bringing somebody who, I will remind the listeners, that is not an American citizen, has never been to America, but is now facing extradition to the United States, where surely he will not be guaranteed any semblance of a fair trial that Americans still believe is, you know, existing right now. I mean, it's just, to me, it's a very, it's a spit in the face of everything that America and I guess any sort of democratic or constitutional republic is supposed to represent. And I also want to say, because I was at, I reported on Bradley Manning's sentencing back in 2013. I was at the military base and saw similar treatment then. And it's just, I really hope that people hearing this can put this in the context of how long this has been going on. You know, we're here in 2020. They're trying to extradite Assange now. We've already seen the punishment of Manning and everything that entailed. I mean, to me, this is just clear examples of egregious violations of the rule of law, of international standards. And I really just hope that's coming across to people in this reporting. And I know that also, like you said, sometimes courtroom proceedings are very tedious and sometimes pretty dry. And so it can be hard to take out the meat and the important part of what's going on so that people understand, because it can be so easy for people to forget that Assange is sitting there kind of wasting away, hoping for justice. And, let's continue on a little bit now. And, what do you see? We're about to resume. By the time people are hearing this, you're going to be back in the courtroom, or watching the courtroom, and we're going to be going into, I think this is expected to take 3 weeks or so for the proceedings. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. I think probably even 4 weeks, as I believe, if I remember correctly, there was 18 witnesses scheduled, and we've only had 4 so far. So if we're going sort of similar pace that we had, you know, this past week, we're probably going to run into the fourth week, if not more. But so far, it's only been, 3 to 4 weeks is what's been in the diary. And I'll quickly very quickly take a step back. You said something I think was quite important about how, you know, we've never seen anything like this before. It's also kind of worth pointing out to kind of show that disparity is that the US is trying to charge Assange basically on American laws. At the same time, they claim that he is not, because he's not an American citizen, he doesn't have the protections of the First Amendment. And that's kind of been explicitly stated by Pompeo and others. So I think that's also a relevant thing to know. In terms of looking forward, I haven't had access to the full witness list just yet, but the names that I have confirmed so far, I believe Noam Chomsky is supposed to give evidence. We have Daniel Ellsberg is supposed to give evidence this week, obviously famously from the Pentagon Papers. We have Nikki Hager giving evidence, who is sort of was one of Assange's early role models and kind of, you know, people that inspired Julian Assange to do what he did in terms of his journalism. Nikki is a journalist from New Zealand who uncovered the Echelon Network, which is sort of the very early days of, you know, what Snowden ended up revealing as PRISM and the Five Eyes Network. Echelon was sort of the sort of 1990s equivalent of that before it kind of developed into what it is today. So Nikki Hager was the one that exposed that originally. We also have Cassandra Fairbanks, who will probably be known to a lot of your listeners. And she plays quite a key role because she visited Assange a number of times in the embassy, but because she's a more of a Republican conservative figure, dealing with those figures, she was quite involved with Richard Grenell, who's now the Director of National Intelligence under Trump. She kind of put out, I've got a story about this on my website that I'm sure you can find, about how kind of, you know, how Grenell essentially was acting, you know, that he was arranging these deals to get Assange out of the embassy, which is precisely showing the political nature of this whole extradition. Obviously, that the US prosecution is trying to argue that this is not a political case, because if it was a political case, it would be denied by the extradition treaty. But, you know, we have all these figures from Trump and Grenell, obviously, you know, clearly political figures doing political actions. So that will be a very key testimony. And as far as I'm aware, those are the only names that come to mind.
And those are, you know, you mentioned Noam Chomsky, obviously a very well-known name. And yes, Cassandra Fairbanks, quite a controversial figure herself in this whole thing. But it does show, as you said, the sort of the political nature of how this has gone. And even here in the U.S., people, let's say Trump supporters and those on the right, sort of trying to interpret Trump's words as if he will pardon Assange. You know, I think some of the Trump supporters who also support Assange are hopeful that some of the things Trump said years ago when he was running for president, you know, are now going to be shown to light. Of course, we also know that since that time, Trump has basically sort of disavowed Assange and acted as if he had never heard of WikiLeaks after talking about them many times. So it is interesting to see how this situation with Assange, it affects UK politics, it affects US politics, and honestly, as you just said a moment ago, it affects the entire world, because if the U.S. can say, well, it doesn't matter if you're a U.S. citizen or not, we can come after you for things that you're accused of, and since you're not a U.S. citizen, you're not guaranteed the protections we would normally give an American. Well, I mean, that sets all sorts of dangerous precedents for the future of journalism. And let's talk about that for a moment as we wrap up here, that this debate about whether or not, you know, terms like hacker get attached to Assange, journalist, publisher, and there's, you know, there's a discussion to be had there about the rights of each of those things. As, you know, does a publisher have the right, or should they have the right, as they have in the past, the protections to publish documents that are in the public interest that have been leaked or may have been hacked, even though they have nothing to do with the hacking? And then as journalists, do we have the right still, as we have in the past, to report on these documents? Could you talk a little bit about that and the implications?
It was actually great that Trevor Tim, who I mentioned earlier from Freedom of the Press Foundation, spoke directly to this point in the court proceedings. He has a sort of a First Amendment law background before doing Freedom of the Press Foundation. And he was saying that actually it's well-established fact in the US that it's these First Amendment protections are not purely for journalists. So, you know, we can debate all we want whether Assange was a journalist or a publisher or whatever, but in sort of in the eyes of the US legal system, it's well established that these protections are afforded to everyone. Just losing my, can you just remind me the what your sort of second part of the question was?
Yeah, so I lost my train of thought. Yeah, so like you said, that these protections should be afforded to whether you're a journalist or a publisher or not. Mm-hmm. And clearly WikiLeaks was acting as a publisher of documents. Assange himself, as far as we know, despite the accusations from the US, was not involved in hacking of anything. Mm-hmm. They were simply publishing. Oh. Go on.
Yeah. I've just remembered, it was the word hacking that brought it all back. And I think that's also a very important one. So obviously, Assange in his earlier days before WikiLeaks did have a bit of a hacking background. But, you know, I think all of his activities with WikiLeaks, there's no evidence of him being personally involved in hacking, especially with sort of relating to the charges that are put forward. You know, Assange did not actually, there was never any hacking that took place. That is the most important thing to kind of establish. Chelsea Manning, she had access to all the documents already before, you know, so there was no hacking that was required to gain access to them. And as was mentioned at her court-martial, you know, she gave all these documents on her own volition because of, you know, her conscience telling her that that was the right thing to do. And, you know, it's one of those cases where the US indictment is quite dishonest about what took place. And, you know, that's been mentioned in the court proceedings because all Assange did was, well, Chelsea sort of asked Julian to kind of help him, help her with keeping herself anonymous by sort of offering this password hash, but it was kind of in the basis of this sort of conversation that would be a common thing between any journalist and a source. So it was all that was done was Assange was sort of offering to help keep her anonymous, but you know, even according to the US prosecution, Assange was not actually successful in doing this. Like they talked about, you know, providing this password hash that would help keep Chelsea anonymous, but it wasn't actually done in the end. And just that alone is being used to say that Assange is responsible for the hacking, even though there is absolutely no hacking that was done because, like I said, Manning had access to all the documents already.
Exactly. And I think that's going to be, I guess, a key point of this prosecution or this attempted prosecution is whatever the U.S. can convince the court if Assange is indeed extradited over here. And even in the extradition hearings, if they can convince the courts that Assange played a more direct role as opposed to just the publishing role. And I think a lot of what we're dealing with hinges on that argument right now. Are there any other closing thoughts you'd like to share? I know that, again, everyone, please do follow his website. We will link that in all the information below this. You can follow his weekly updates as we go through these next couple weeks.
Yeah. I think, you know, it seems that, you know, people are, you know, more and more people are having this conversation. And I guess the one final closing thought is because we sort of discussed how affects left and affects right. I think, you know, it's really important for people to not view this as sort of a partisan issue. You know, it affects absolutely everyone. And I think in terms of if you're on the left wing or the right wing, I think it's hopefully somewhere where we can or the United States can find some sort of common ground, you know, in terms of the First Amendment and freedom of speech. Kind of as an observer of US politics from afar, it seems like the country is constantly becoming more and more divided and split. So hopefully kind of something about the First Amendment is somewhere we kind of both sides can find agreement. And if people can take that into their sort of conversations going forward, that'd be great.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, you are correct that here in the U.S., things have become more divisive, and even what may have in the past been a very simple issue of let's support freedom of speech, let's support, you know, freedom of expression, whether you agree with the person or not, has now been turned, unfortunately, due to the elections. You know, WikiLeaks has become a partisan thing, or maybe some on the left who 10 years ago were supportive of Assange and their effort, WikiLeaks' efforts, have now sort of turned their backs on it because they assume it's, well, WikiLeaks is helping the Russians and these sort of narratives. So we are doing our best to help people see the truth of the situation.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for your great work, as always. I've been seeing it online, and yeah, it's great to see that, you know, what you're doing and many other independent media are doing such a great job where other people are failing. So good job on that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone, I will include his website and his reports in the description below, and I recommend following him on Twitter and following his website to get updates over the next few weeks. Thank you for all you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Run.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries, Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time, and we have all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea